Bumps on the Road to Brexit. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. Brexit talks are not going well. Later this morning, UK Prime Minister Theresa May will deliver a speech that she hopes will break the deadlock between British and EU negotiators. We have the BBC's Theo Leggett to help us understand the snags the Prime Minister is trying to untangle. Good morning, Theo.
Good morning.
We're expecting a lot from this speech, but it all revolves, or partly revolves, around the amount of money Britain will need to pay as part of this divorce settlement. First of all, why does Britain need to pay the EU, and how much are we talking about?
As part of the European Union, Britain signed up to a number of financial commitments. And Britain has committed to these budgets for several years going into the future. And the position of Michel Barnier, who's the EU's negotiator, is that Britain should respect its commitments. It should pay what it owes. The European Union has made it clear that they want clarity on that aspect before they'll start talking about things like a trade deal. And we are expecting to hear something from Theresa May on that today. Probably not a concrete figure.
I assume Theresa May is not going to settle these outstanding issues in her speech. What is the point of this speech? What is she going to say?
Theresa May is standing up in Florence and making this big set-piece speech in an attempt to get the negotiations back on track, in an attempt to provide some reassurance both to the EU negotiators that Britain is willing to make concessions, and also to provide some reassurance to people within her own party, in fact, that she won't be giving too much away, because that is the big argument within the British government itself at the moment. People who want something not too far distant from EU membership, and the people on the other side of the debate who want none of all of that and want Britain to gain as much autonomy from the European Union as possible. So it's a tightrope she's got to walk.
The BBC's Theo Leggett, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.25%. The Dow, S&P and NASDAQ futures are down in the 10th percent range, with the Dow future down 12 points. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue visits Texas today to survey damage to crops and ranches inflicted by Hurricane Harvey. One often overlooked responsibility of the Department of Agriculture is overseeing SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as food stamps. After disasters like Harvey, the USDA offers a version of this called Disaster SNAP, and it's just starting to roll out in Texas. Marketplace's Annie Baxter has more.
The part of Texas where Harvey hit already had a lot of low-wage workers and a hunger problem, with an estimated 1 million households on SNAP, or food stamps. That's according to Rachel Cooper at the Center for Public Policy Priorities in Austin.
Harvey came in and made things worse, obviously, and so now there's an estimated additional 750,000 households who would be eligible for temporary help under the DSNAP program, Disaster SNAP.
DSNAP gives 2 months of food stamp benefits to eligible people who didn't get them before. Jim Weil is president of the Food Research and Action Center. He says disasters destroy businesses, disrupt jobs, and increase need across the board. Weil says the good news is that the traditional food stamp program can expand in times of crisis.
There's no sort of quota or cap on the number of people who can be in the program.
So when the temporary disaster assistance ends, Weil expects many people may be eligible to transition onto regular SNAP. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
The full extent of damage caused by hurricanes like Irma and Harvey and Maria is not always immediately apparent. In some cases, for no other reason than the fact that the damage is so vast and takes time to even observe. In Texas, the Red Cross has been experimenting with a way to speed up the process and the recovery itself using drones. Houston Public Media's Travis Bubenik reports.
In a pasture east of Houston, a Red Cross team is huddled around a laptop, watching live images from a camera 400 feet above.
This is our tethered drone that's called the Park.
Patrick Graham's with drone maker Sci-Fi Works. He's been traveling the Harvey-ravaged coast, using the drone's 4 to 5 mile camera range to track the damage. Perry Stoll, also with Sci-Fi, has been watching the pictures come in back at the company's Massachusetts headquarters. He says it's been hard to look at.
you know, a lot of devastation, a lot of ripped off roofs, ripped off siding, collapsed infrastructure. Just really, you know, there's going to be a lot of work to repair and get it back to a livable state.
Kevin McClon's a volunteer with the Red Cross. He's been using the drone to help people as they return to their neighborhoods now that floodwaters have receded. For instance, he says in the hard-hit town of Holiday Lakes, south of Houston, the view from the skies helped relief crews respond much faster than they could have by driving around.
We were able to really assess damage quickly and actually had a team that afternoon going down with food, water, and supplies in order to help the families that were there.
The UPS Foundation, the shipping company's charitable arm, funded this experiment. The foundation's president, Ed Martinez, says he hopes drones become a standard tool the Red Cross uses for disaster relief.
My vision is that we establish a rapid response unit that we can deploy as soon as a disaster occurs, that we can connect with emergency response agency on the scene that's ready to go.
Still, there are some basic challenges dealing with drone regulations and getting permission to fly. There are privacy concerns to consider, and when roads are flooded after a storm, it's sometimes hard to get close enough to an affected area to launch the drone. Martinez says he'd like to see the team move to Florida now, as communities there begin the recovery process. In Houston, I'm Travis Bubinick for Marketplace.
Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer this week is Brian Allison. And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.